And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on AmericanFreedomRadio.com for your listening pleasure. Tonight, we have a woman who does not work construction, although her name would suggest it. It's Angela Foreman from the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, named after the mating call of a cane toad. Wagga Wagga. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Vinnie. How are you going? Nice to talk to you online, on radio. It's been a couple of years. What's it been, a year and a half, 2 years?
It has been, and we have been enjoying your soap products ever since. It's funny, my wife was just saying, hey, Vinnie, we're about to run out of Angela's wonderful soap.
Yeah, it's ready to go off because you can't live without it.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to stay clean. Especially if your job is to deal with the filth of society. So, speaking of which, there's been a long time between shows with you, and we have one segment here to run a brief catch-up. What would you like to talk about today?
First of all, I don't know if you want to fill people in on what happened with my daughter's chemical poisoning with the Department of Education in Australia, which we talked about is probably the same in New Zealand because they seem to follow each other. my daughter Bridget was poisoned by school cleaning chemicals, and still after I proved it to them, showed them the MSDSs and everything else, they're still using it. And we've been waiting now, it's now the end of the term, the school term, and we're still waiting to get her into school because she's developed such a sensitivity after 3 years that she can no longer enter the school without having an anaphylactic-like reaction to these extreme chemicals you're talking about. Chemicals that form formaldehyde when they come into contact with water or sweat. So that's what children are exposed to. So why they haven't done anything, we don't know. But I'm still fighting it, and not just for me but for other parents.
What's the source of this chemical contamination?
The source, do you want to know? Well, Joss Cleaning Chemicals bring in these chemicals to Australia. They buy them from somebody, and I'll name them. They're Joss. They can do whatever they like, but I'm naming them. They have most of the contracts for all the cleaning of all the schools in Australia, and they also have other subsidiary companies that they claim aren't theirs, but they're actually, anyway, that's another story for another day. But they insist on bringing these chemicals that are really toxic to children, and even though I've proved it, they're still using them. And the education department, I go from the minister back to the principal, back to the education director, and they keep sending me around. And regardless of what I say or what I've proved, they're still using them on children in schools. So
So you were asking what the reason why they wouldn't take them out is. I would say that obviously some company has made a lot of money off of putting it in the schools, and they don't want their money to be taken away. Isn't that pretty straightforward?
Yeah, that sounds like what I thought, but then they could use a cheaper alternative, but they still insist on using this other one that is toxic and bad in most of the world. Why would they do that? I don't know, Vinny. You know, we know a lot about what's going on in the world at the moment.
A company wants to make a profit, it's at its best advice not to sell its products as cheap as it possibly can. It's supposed to sell them for what people will pay for them.
Yeah, that's probably right. But the fact is that I proved that they were toxic, not by me. I proved by their own MSDSs that they produce formaldehyde in the classroom, and they still insist on using them, which is my biggest question as to why. And I don't know.
Avoiding liability, perhaps. A lot of children have gotten sick over the years, and suddenly they'll have somebody to blame and or sue or hold responsible for it?
Yeah, no, or they just go, oh, we didn't know. You'd think that my logical thing as a parent would be that they would say, oh, we didn't know. Well, okay, we'll change it, but they're still using those same chemicals, which makes me wonder exactly what their agenda is. Well, I think it goes far deeper. As I dig, it goes far deeper than that.
Logic as a parent is probably not a whole lot of use here. Logic of a psychopath, on the other hand.
Exactly. Psychopath is what I'm stating, that I think they're psychopaths, but, you know, and they can say what they like, but I can prove they're psychopaths, because you'd think that 2 years ago, after I brought all the information to them, they would do something about it. And there are cheaper alternatives for them as well, and they could do it, but they still insist on using this terrible toxins in the schools.
But there's not too much development on this story. It's simply just going through this long, drawn-out process, isn't it?
And children are sick, and people don't know why the children are sick at the schools. They think that they've got flus, they think they've got depression, anxiety. You know, then you go into the unflu gas heating. The whole thing, it's, to me, it's a soft kill, but that's my opinion. I'm not stating that's a fact, but my opinion is it's a soft kill.
And maybe sick. Maybe the best target is not the people who could technically have the authority to remove the chemicals, but your target should probably be the parents whose children are currently affected by said chemicals, and getting them on side and then making some kind of big group effort to expose this and hold these people to account.
It's funny, because I go through the same thing as you, is that I've tried to do that, and parents saying, you're doing a great job, Angela, I really appreciate it, keep it up. But they don't do anything. They don't go down and get the MSDSs. They don't pursue what I've, you know, given the information, go down and ask for them. And actually, what you might know, since the last time we spoke, they've actually, parents aren't allowed to go in to get the MSDSs from their schools anymore, whereas they're readily available to fire brigades and ambulance and all that sort of stuff if something happens. But if a parent goes in there and asks for the MSDSs, where I was able to do it previously before, suddenly they click on a thing, oh, I need to speak to the principal. So I've had several parents that have tried to do that, and they're not allowed to get the MSDSs to find out what they're using in their own child's school. And they're passed on through the same, so there's a whole rigmarole, whereas I was able to walk in there, get the MSDSs, and have a look at them and go, oh, my God, because you know my background in soap making, I know what chemicals and toxins, and that's what I do for a living, is removing toxins from people's lives. They're not able to do that anymore, so they've put another thing in there, so parents aren't allowed to actually access the MSDSs. I don't know if that's legal, I don't know, but all I know is they're not able to get them.
Well, as far as I know, any barrier to justice is completely legal.
It's just disgusting, isn't it? I mean, but the interesting thing you say that, you know, about parents, I had the local paper, they've got a new editor, and he did a great job on a story, because Bridget's been waiting, you know, till the end of the term to go back to school. All they had to do was remove the chemicals. That's it. And replace them with a non-toxic chemical, because she's become anaphylactic to those chemicals. And basically it's like anyone who's overexposed, they get to the point where you can't tolerate it anymore, which means her body's actually working really well. And it's saying, don't expose me to these anymore, you know, and it'll react really badly when it's around them. And the editor to the local newspaper here in Wagga has done a story, and it's quite interesting. And I can read out to you some of the things he said. He said, at a time when students aren't even able to bring peanut butter into some schools due to allergy hyper-awareness, it's mystifying while the department cleaners aren't obliged to do a different cleaning product. And then he said, when the advertiser quizzed the department about the issue, a spokesman did his best Trappist monk impersonation. They can't believe it either. So this is a new bunch of, you know, people coming through to the media. They'll probably be shut down like the rest of them, but, you know, at least we got a couple of good things put in the paper. So
has this been reported before and the people who reported it got shut down?
Yeah, no. After the last show that we did, it was supposed to be on, was it Today Tonight or A Current Affair? They did a whole story and they were saying I was Erin Brockovich of Australia, which is kind of an insult to me because I'm not a big fan of hers anymore. But that's between me and my thoughts. The editor actually said to me that if I write the story, he can print it. But he said, I have to write it because there's government lawyers in every office and they tell us what we can and can't say and what we can and can't print. He was rung up by somebody to say, shut down that story about your daughter and the chemical poisoning. I proved it. I didn't prove it. Their own MSDS has proved it. I didn't have to prove it, and I had all the evidence. And some terrible illnesses were in Bridget's school. And I can't prove it. One child died, and two children are dying, or at least one is. and they just go down the road that, you know, the same things that Bridget had, where she wasn't able to walk properly, she was covered in chemical burn, they didn't have the chemical burn. It wasn't the cleaner's fault, he didn't know it was toxic. I didn't know it was toxic, and it's what I do for a living. So, yeah, I'm calling out. I'd like all the parents to go down to this school and demand the MSDSs, because to just sit back and say, well, Angela will do it, that's not enough. We need multiple people to come down and say, what are you using at my child's school? But the interesting thing was that I got lots of good comments after that story, but other people said, oh, does she think she's special? Because she could go down and spray her child's desk with vinegar. You know, she thinks she's special. And I'm like, what? Your child is sitting there at that desk exposed to those chemicals, but they just don't get it. It's like, I don't know. You know a bit more about the blindness. People just don't get it. I don't know.
In today's society, it pays to never underestimate people's ignorance.
I know. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
No, it's totally believable if you've watched television or listened to talk radio in the last 10 years on the mainstream spectrum. It's like, yeah, I understand.
To me, it was shocking because I thought I'd go to the education department and I'd show them. It took me 2.5 years to work out what was wrong. And that's what I do for a living is toxic, you know, toxic-free living. And when I finally found the MSDSs, someone said, go down to the school, get the MSDSs. I thought they'd go, oh, my God, Angela, let's remove them. But as you know, I copped it. And they'd say to me, have you got deep pockets if you want to sue us? And they had these evil, horrible people at the head of the education department. I can't really understand their mental thinking, but they're psychopathic as far as I'm concerned. And you had the other women standing around saying, why don't we use vinegar? Why don't we use natural cleaners? Why don't we use it, you know? And they just, no, we've got to, you know, prove it. That's what they'd say to me. Prove it, Angela, prove it. And Peter Brabin was the, and I'll name him on radio, was the educational regional director at the time. And he just tried to destroy me. And I ended up nearly having a nervous breakdown trying to deal with it. But since then, I've gotten stronger, so I'm able to take the fight on again. And Bridget wants to go to school. She wants to. She's in year seven now. Well, she hasn't been able to attend school, but she's in year seven now, and she wants to go to school. And she's really smart, you know.
Well, it sounds like exactly like you're dealing with a psychopath, because that's how they operate. It's like no. This wall of denial, and then this wall of revenge and consequences for taking them on. Right, it's almost like they're trying to cast a circle of painful protection around them to shield themselves from anybody doing anything to them or with them that they don't want. And, it will destroy you going head-to-head with these people every single time. Every single time. I have never seen anybody take these kind of people head-on who hasn't suffered immense amounts of anxiety or trauma or financial stress or having problems with their kids and goodness knows what. These scum destroy lives on a professional level.
Psychopaths, that's what they do. They love it. And they don't get it when you tell them. And I just thought I'd go to them and show them and say, oh, look at these, and prove it, Angela. I said, no, I don't have to prove it. It's right there. And they kept on, prove it. And I'm just like, just disgusting. And to me, my personal opinion, and they can take me to court over it, I don't really give a stuff anymore because I'm going to win. And I'm not after any compensation. I never was. All I want is the chemicals removed, not only for my own child but for other children. And they just don't want to do it. And that makes me wonder what on earth is the agenda behind it. And I started digging into the backgrounds and who imports the chemicals, and I found out who imports them. So you start digging and then you find out a whole lot of other stuff. Once you start unpeeling the onion, it gets deep and it goes back to the same people. You know how it works, Vinny.
Yeah, it's called fractal scumbaggery. Everything's a holographic projection of everything else. So it doesn't matter what kind of scumbaggery you start researching into. As soon as you start looking into it, you'll start to see the exact same patterns and the exact same sociopathic criminal psychopaths are coming into view.
Yeah, exactly. But what parents don't realise is if they all came together with me, you know, or, you know, from across the world, and across Australia, across New Zealand, and found out what the MSDSs are, put the demand on, it would be over. But they just think, oh, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want the principal to be upset with me. I don't want blah, 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 you know. I don't want to But yeah, it takes, I can't do it on my own. You know what it's like. It's like everyone goes, oh, you do it, Vinny.
I love that when it happens, man. It's like,
No,
I don't want to go and get the MSDS when I can have BS delivered for free.
Exactly.
For F's sake.
I know, and it's that simple. If we even had, 500 parents walking the streets, but no, I get them all say, well, oh, you're doing a great job, Angela. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And then you get your attackers, who obviously a very small minority, but they've been paid. But I had one woman say that apparently I'm a conspiracy theorist, and you know, and she put all this stuff. Apparently she was saying that, anyway, it's just amazing that when you're doing the right thing, you're trying to protect other people's children as well, that they'll attack you.
That's right. Right, we're coming to break now. Angela, I want to thank you very much for joining me here today. The Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, Google that or go to the banner on the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can get some of that wonderful soap and products and all sorts of stuff shipped out here straight from Aussie, the pristine, the beautiful place to mine gold and uranium. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest joining me now from Dunedin is Ben Vidgen from Postman Productions. Ben, welcome back to the program.
G'day, Vinnie. How you doing there? Oh, that's a bit, I was so used to being on here, I nearly actually queued myself in there, so apologies for cutting you off.
I love the irony of radio show hosts interviewing radio show hosts.
I love it.
but anyway, this Northland election that's just happened here, you've dug up some details on that, but of course that's not just the only topic we want to cover here, so anything your mind feels like letting go of, go for your life, son.
Well, it's been a hell of a last couple of weeks, actually, and I think I've actually carved myself a really good little niche spot in media land, and a lot of it's utilizing how I've used social media. You know, as you know, Vinny, I'm not afraid to cover fringe news topics, and unfortunately that means as soon as you start covering the subjects which the mainstream media are all nervous about, that means they give you absolutely zero exposure. But what I've basically been doing is basically covering stories and getting out key core details and making sure that Pacific politicians and Pacific media people that do have respect for what I'm doing are following my links. And from some of the things I've been seeing the last couple of weeks, I'm obviously having some impact. And the North elections was a lot of fun. It's a little bit like a sniper. I'm down here all the way down in Dunedin, but I've got myself a spotter up there in Northland who knows where all the bodies are buried. So he was sort of pretty much telling me where the targets were, and I was sort of chink, chink, and then, you know, firing off my rounds, which were reaching deep into Northland, and people were paying attention. And a lot of that was to do with certain people that have got name suppression, certain things to do with the car industry, certain things to do with Sky City and the gang activity. We were pretty pleased with some of the results. And just to give you one example, we had one of the pieces I was looking at was this election, I think, really caught the National Party with their trousers down, because they forgot a whole bunch of significant factors. And first of all was they weren't, John specifically, I think there were people in the National Party, we'll get to that in a second, but John wasn't, he thought this was a safe seat, that it was all looked after. And then when the things sort of started to come undone, he suddenly realised it wasn't just that they were going to lose a seat, which still gives National that majority in the party, but it suddenly changes the political spectrum quite remarkably, because it goes from those minor parties being able to turn around and say, oh, you know, we were just going along with John and we couldn't really do anything because they had all the majority shareholdings and blah, 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 to now those minor parties have to kind of say, well, actually, they have to be very careful about what they do vote for and what they don't vote for in the lead up to the next 2.5 years for the next election, because they're now going to be held accountable for it. So basically that means that the Māori Party can't just sit back and go, you know, take the free limousine rides. They've actually got to, especially up in this area and the East Coast, they've actually got to show that they were, they've been a bit more discerning with what they vote and what they won't vote for. It obviously puts Peter Dunn in a completely different change, and it's been interesting. I mean, you've actually heard Peter Dunn saying sort of basically statements along the lines of, oh, you know, we should decriminalise marijuana, which is, you know, coming from Peter Dunn's mouth, it's just like, you know, you want to slap yourself and go, did he really say that? And then, of course, the other great change or name change of the situation is that, okay, we've now got New Zealand First have picked up that extra seat, so that I think they've gone all up to about 11 or 12. But more importantly, what's going to happen is that they've effectively wiped out, and I'm personally sad to see this go happen, but effectively they've wiped out the Māori Party, so that's one third party out of the equation. So the next ones on their sites are going to be, it's going to be a real competition going into the next election for those Māori Party seats, whether or not the Māori Party can actually keep the seats or actually lose them to Winston, which will then turn around and put them up to 13, 14. We've already seen from this election that National voters have actually bailed from National, and so they picked up a portion of those went to Winston. So he's going to pick up another seat. Probably New Zealand is liable winner, so they'll probably take one off Labour, which then really changes the game, because then we actually turn around and we've got New Zealand First doing a bit of an overtake, and they're going from fourth position in the polls into overtaking the Green Party to be the third party, which basically means that no party, whether it's National or Labour, is going to be able to govern in the next election if that crystal ball forecast of mine rings true without National. So without New Zealand First. So you know, New Zealand First has really come out as the warden of the North, and that was one of the things that you know we got out of one of the people down here in Facebook. He put out a really lovely little montage of one of the characters from Game of Thrones, and it had Winston Peters superimposed, and it had you know Winston Peters warden of the North, and I used that one, and I tagged it, and I tagged very selectively who that went to. So I went to quite a number of said, you know, New Zealand First politicians, political candidates that I knew that were following the story. Sites up in Whangarei that I knew were being followed both by media and by people interested in the elections. And the next thing you know, on election night, that was the montage image they actually had when you know Winston came in across the finishing line. They actually used that one that I'd started off with. So it was a nice feeling to kind of get that sort of feedback that somebody was paying attention.
So Winston and the New Zealand First Party are now the watchers on the wall. And,
Pretty much, well, yeah. No
doubt winter is coming.
Oh, very much. This is, you know, like, I mean, the tricky part with Winston is that, you know, this guy is, he's a protege of Muldoon, and he knows how to play the game. And, you know, you can't apply normal titles as black hats or white hats to Winston, because he will change according to whatever will get him out to where it is. The question is, I do believe that he has New Zealand's interests at heart. But you know, the question is, when it comes to things like the TPPA, will Winston actually honour that situation and actually be, you know, will he say no, we're not going to sign the TPPA, and if you want me to be in government with you, that's one of the conditions that you know that will do it. Or will he actually go with the American camp, which is basically what the TPPA is, and say, well, we actually will sign the TPPA because the TPPA is a better bet than going with, you know, with basically China. And that's a $64,000 question. I personally believe that Winston is he's horse trading. You know, he's sending the deal a signal to the American camp saying, we will be within your sphere of influence and we will support you against the Chinese DiMaggio line, but the cost will be that we actually get to retain our sovereignty. So, you know, I think it's not an ideal situation, but it's the lesser of two evils.
Well, how exactly is the whole political game going to change? Because we're coming into an election in, less than 2 years' time, 2017 election, isn't it, Ben?
It's two and a half years. And as I said, you know, basically, if it carries on the way it is right now, it's going to be that no party is going to be able to form a government without the support of Winston Peters, period. That's, you know, and the other thing too, which is going to be really interesting, is that, and I'm going to come back to this in a second, because, you know, right now, National's lost one seat, which takes it down to 59. They're actually getting into really dangerous waters, and a lot can happen in politics. And you know, there's no reason to suspect that another by-election couldn't happen somewhere else. You know, because we don't know what else the Nats are trying to put down. And this is where it gets to the very interesting bit. There's a lot of suggestions that what's actually happening up here in this election and a lot of the stuff that's actually coming isn't actually coming from outside of National, that it's actually somebody within the National Party is actually leaking it. And if you break down the issues and what's happening in the National camp, you've got one group of people in the National Party that are very much the pro-American camp, and the other side of the fence is very much the pro-Chinese election side of things. And, you know, what struck me during this entire election is, you know, which female politician whose face did we not see in any of the photo ops there? Judith Collins. She was nowhere to be seen. You know, and considering that her husband has involvement with Aravind, how do you pronounce it? Is it Aravind Adia, the milk company?
It could be a rubber ducky milk company
So how do you pronounce it?
I'm just joking, bro. I'm just saying rubber ducky.
Yeah, I think it's Aravada. O-R-A-V-I-D-A. But I like that we'll call it the rubber ducky because it sounds like a duck.
Aravadio, an oral invasion.
Yeah, so exactly. So, I mean, Aravadio. So there we have Judith Collins, nowhere to be seen, but they've got a company, major company, that supposedly employs lots of people up there, and she's totally absent. And, of course, the other thing about it is that, you know, the other great photo opportunity that you see with Judith Collins these days is her clinking glasses with her husband at the Sky City Casino, which, of course, you know, this is the other thing was all of this election coincided. If you've actually been paying attention, there have been wave after wave after wave of busts that have been going against the headhunters. And that's all about, tied up on the back of all of that, is you've got the trade of methamphetamine, which is part of it. Is we know a lot of that money laundering operation. I think it's Javaris and Operation Mana. You know, those operations were central to Sky City Casino. Time and time again, this is the thing that National always backs for, the Sky City Casino. They hold all their conferences there. Judith's, you know, husband's company held their conferences there. Yet, you know, this is a company that turned around. That's all in this methamphetamine trade, their name turns up in the trial all the time, that the gangsters, the headhunters, the triads are always there. Here we have this bus after bus, and it's not just the money that they're doing, but also tied to that central of the headhunters trade, is that you've got the black market trade for curry being changed, black market curry trees, which is $1 million a tree, being traded in exchange for methamphetamine. Likewise, you've got illegal fisheries, which is from the northern illegal fisheries going up there. You've got the power industry. So you've got this huge illicit black market trade, which links into the headhunters, which also ties in again and again with corrupt police officers up in the Northland District area, which leads, the money trail keeps on leading back to Northland. And, you know, there's certain parties, people that, you know, behind this election, all that money, that goes back to the Chinese camp. And supporting that Chinese camp, we've got basically a good fraction of the National Party that doesn't want to side with the Americans and the TPPA. So I think there's actually civil war waging deep within the National Party.
There has been leaks from the National Party before. I believe Nikki Haga, pre-2011, was given an enormous leak of background emails and plans and this very cynical assessment by the National Party members of their own voters and how they specifically went for the racist redneck vote.
Oh, totally. And you know, this is, again, Trace Hodgkins is a really good friend of mine, but he put out a fantastic, Trace Hodgkins, for those who don't know, he's a cartoonist that's won Cartoonist of the Year 2 years in a row. He suffers Listener, Metro, Dominion, very, very prominent cartoonist. But he put out a really fantastic cartoon not long ago, and it's got a picture of Judith Collins running around with machine guns screaming, "Leaks, leaks, I'll give you leaks!" And, you know, all the National guys are running for cover going, you know, "Judith, you know, we're on your side," and the caption reads "friendly fire." So, you know, you look at those sort of, you know, people are picking up on those sort of things. People on my mate Trace are picking up on that, but then you also start to read Whale Oil's blog, and it's clearly very anti-John Key. It's things, very interesting things that are actually happening, and of course, you know, Duncan Garner, you know, the one of the most poignant things he turned around and said on the election night, and I said again, it was with that Warden of the North image in the background. He turned around and said, quote unquote, "John is running away from the party." So on election night, on this very important, you know, event, where was John Key to be seen? You know, he wasn't anywhere near that party. He didn't want to be tied with a loser. He was in Melbourne watching a cricket game, and he still hasn't emerged, you know, 3 days after the election. No one's actually turned around and said, "Well, John is in hiding. He's got his tail tucked between his legs and going, bok, 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 hey."
I think what's happening here is that we're seeing a shift of some kind. Now, it seems to me that it looks almost coordinated. I don't know. This is just the suspicious part of my mind running rampant here. But I'd said for a long time that John Key wouldn't become unelected until he'd destroyed New Zealand, as was the purpose he was sent here for. But with the TPPA due to be signed before the end of this year, God help me.
It's not going to happen. Don't get me wrong, guys. We need to get out there and we need to protest this really, really heavily. And I wouldn't mind if we've got time to talk about that too. But the reality is there are so many divided fractions within the TPPA. I just do not see my casting the dice, and I've been wrong before, that's okay, but my casting the dice is I do not think that TPPA will get signed this year. And you've just hit the nail on the head again, Vanessa. It's like John Key was sent to destroy New Zealand, but unfortunately, well, fortunately for us, the other people that wanted to destroy New Zealand don't want to destroy it for the other side, so they want to destroy John Key so they can get and destroy us. You know, there's competition on who's going to destroy us, and for once it's actually been to our benefit.
It's like two fat people sitting at a table where there's only one chicken leg to eat.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, and it gives us a slither of hope, because this is the chance now where, like in Lord of the Rings, you know, we need to put the orcs against the orcs, and they've had them so busy destroying each other that it gives us a fighting chance.
How can we fan the flames? I mean, like, you know how these leaks and everything are really, really effing off some of the national leadership. How can we fan the flames? How can we just toss a ham sandwich in between and get these two hobos to fight it out?
Well, the thing is, you know, part of what's happening during the election, again, is part of that equation, in that I had a gentleman up in Northland who he's very well connected. He's a very successful businessman. And because of his social connections, he was able to feed me really good information, which, as I said, just like, you know, a sniper's rifle, I was just able to go, ching, ching, boom, fire these rounds down the range, get them onto the social media sites that I knew were going to be, you know, because the thing was, at that time, the media issue of the day was Whangarei. Those, you knew that the social media sites and all the other new dogs in media land were going to be following was those social media sites. So they were the obvious ones to be passing your information onto. So what we need to do now is look at what the next issue is going to come up and use a similar tactic. Find people on the ground that don't necessarily...
Ben, I'm sorry, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the first hour of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ben, I'm sorry, we were cut off by the break just there. Could you please keep going?
Well, you know, my attitude, we talk about, you know, how to get this fight going on between the National Party, because, I mean, they're ready to implode. It's just absolutely delightful. And before I interject, like, did you get to watch the fight with Whale Oil and Ryder? Did you see that at all?
No.
Oh, it was hilarious. And I've been trying to track down a YouTube clip. But
regale me.
Well, what actually happened was Ryder turned around and he went in with the left and went, bam, you know, and he got himself all set up to do the right wing. And that's what they said, that, you know, he went bam with the first and hit him with the right and knocked him out basically as soon as Whale Oil got into the ring. But in actual fact, if you actually watch the footage, Ryder hits him with the left, goes to hit him with the right, and Whale Oil falls over. Doesn't even hit him with a second hit. He's like, oh, no.
I'm beached ass, bro.
Yeah, and, like, you know, the thing is, again, it's like normally these situations have been all oppressive. You know, he would have been YouTubing the stuff all over the place, but, you know, there's no – Whale Oil is not putting any YouTubes out on the fight. So, you know, it was an absolute – that night was great. Whale Oil got his ass kicked. He got certain bankruptcy notices, and the John Key lost an election seat. Doesn't get better than you can possibly try.
Isn't it an interesting twist of fate seeing Whale Oil go up in flames?
Oh, it's just symbolic. But, you know, getting back to the point, it's that, you know, what I've done is I'm looking around and I see a story, and it doesn't matter where it's happening in the country. I'm looking around and go, okay, there's a story there. Who do I know in the area there that's actually got access to good influence and give me good information, but doesn't necessarily want to raise their, you know, heads above the parrot? So they're my spotter. So then they feed me the information, and from that, because I know that that's where the media is looking at that time, that's when I start targeting the social media sites of the people and the issues related to those. You know, so for example, it was 1080. That would be where I'd be putting my information. But in this case, it was to do with the election. So I was putting my information onto sites to do with the election because I knew that's where the other media people would be looking. So what I was basically doing was creating a media landmine so that, you know, I put the information there so that, you know, the other guys will literally pick up on the information and run with it. They may not necessarily take all of my points or run for as far as I'd like them to, but they were at least getting that ball on the ground. And, you know, for me, it was a really sense of, like, you know, in 1 week I saw, you know, what happened with the Mike Saban. It was great. The other one is that tomorrow morning I'm going to be interviewing Stephen Flint, Dr. Stephen Flint from Massey University about the 1080 terrorism issue. What he
tell people
out.
About your show and when it's on, Ben.
It'll be on every Friday night at 3 p.m. It's on ORFM, but if you just Google, basically go ORFM, there's a live link so you can listen at 3 p.m. anytime you like, anywhere in the world. Basically, we use a format, half an hour of the format goes into local gig for Southland and Otago, which may not be of interest to you, but the other half an hour is the idea is that we'll be always bringing in some really fascinating guests from all around the world with issues that are relating and hopefully providing you with some really good, solid information. And this is the case that what I'm doing tomorrow is we're doing a pre-record for the Friday show because it's Easter, but I'm interviewing Stephen Flint, or Dr. Stephen Flint, and he's the guy that pointed out that the 1080, which was sent 4 months ago before John Key, during election issue, decided to release this amazing material, he pointed out that the 1080 that the supposed activists were using, threatening Fonterra with, actually, in fact, wasn't common 1080, which is dyed green, but it was actually industrial 1080, which meant that it had to come from a industrial source, which kind of, at that point, when we, you know, I got that information, Radio New Zealand picked up with it, the other guys turned around and broadcast it, but they didn't really follow up information, but I then interviewed Dr. Ian Shaw from Canterbury University. Dr. Ian Shaw pointed out to me that forensically what should have occurred was they should have done what they call an HLCP, which is high chromium liquid performance, or something along those lines. It's on my website, www.postmanproductions.org. But basically, they should have conducted an HLCP. And what that would do, it would allow you to look at any trace elements or impurities that existed in the 1080. From those, you would be able to extrapolate what the origin of the 1080 is. And basically, it looks like the police have not carried out that basic or most basic forensic test. So they're running around interviewing the activists and asking them all sorts of stupid questions, which just, you know, it's more of a witch hunt. But the reality is that we've got a white powder, and the only country that really uses that white powder form is actually China. And this is where it gets interesting, because if you actually, you know, what the official narrative is, they're telling us that activists will be astute enough to notice the fact that our milk contracts are under jeopardy with China, and that they would deliberately send 1080 to Fonterra, because that's just not how activists involved in 1080 think. That's nonsense. It's just silly. They certainly wouldn't have the scientific profile ability to get hold of industrial 1080. Or what the police were saying was that, oh, well, maybe it's normal 1080, but these very clever, cunning 1080 activists have sat down and have somehow managed to extrapolate the dye from the 1080 and make it look like it was actually industrial 1080, so that, you know, because they're that cunning. Which is just, you know, I mean, they call me a conspiracy theorist, for God's sake.
The official narrative on a lot of things is basically just a conspiracy theory, except what we...
It is. I
mean, they just call it something different. They call it the official story.
Well, exactly. This is a conspiracy theory par excellence, because they've got not one shred of evidence, yet they're actually trialing by media the 1080 activists. And what's very, very interesting, if you look between the lines, John Key also asked whether it would be okay to bring in the New Zealand SIS to help in the investigation of this 1080 activism situation, 1080 poisoning threat. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the New Zealand Intelligence Service's brief says that they're only involved in acts of terrorism or espionage which actually involve foreign domestic powers. So that's a really telling statement. Either they're changing the rule book on us, or else John Key knows that this 1080 did not come from activist circles, but the most likely suspect outside of 1080 activism is either somebody that wants us to keep buying hundreds of millions of dollars of this toxin, or it's actually the Chinese. And the Chinese do not want us in the infant white formula market. And they said this is a trade-off. You know, we've got to choose. We can either have the Chinese market and we're part of the Chinese umbrella, or else we decide that we're part of the American Five Eyes security TPPA umbrella, in which case we're going to suddenly find that these sort of things start happening to our markets all the time. And if you actually look at it, it's not the first time this has happened. Suddenly, you know, we had botulism scare, then we had the San Luis situation, then we had the beef situation. There's been about three or four cases even before this popped up where things have suddenly occurred where the Chinese have been very, very discreetly saying to us, be careful, you can't have it both ways. And we're stuck between the middle. You know, we've been trying to be more smart and have the Chinese trade dollars and the American security umbrella, and now we're discovering that we can't have both.
It's like the one attractive guy in the room being fought over by the two ugliest, biggest women in the room. It's pretty horrific. You know, you're going to get an arm ripped off, mate. Here's the thing that's so freaking ridiculous to me. Activists, every activist that I've met so far, who's not some kind of militant, crazed terrorist, who's not an activist, there's a different classification for that, protects human life. What activist who has that as their mantra poisons baby formula?
Well, anybody that knows anything about the 1080 activism scene would agree with you 100%. You know, and it's this whole thing of, you know, the police that they've actually, I mean, this is the thing, the police that they've actually sent in to do the investigation have turned around to the activists and said, I didn't know that about 1080. They've been sending people who actually have done no research on what they're actually meant to be investigating. So how the hell are they meant to find out who's responsible when they don't even have a basic understanding about what this whole process is actually all about or what the issues are actually about? It's also Greg Olgerby, who's a police communications officer, and again, one of the people I communicated with. I turned around to him and I said, Greg, you're trying to tell us that 1080 activists, the police are saying that they're not willing to rule out that activists may have actually taken normal 1080 and broken it down to extrapolate the dye to make it look white. And I said, Greg, what you're basically just telling me is that you actually haven't done the forensic tests, because if you had, you'd be able to actually establish that. Now, how come it takes you 4 months to conduct basic forensics 101? This is the most, you know, that's what I turned around to Ian Shaw. I said, you know, if you wanted to know what the origins, and this, he's a toxicologist, this is the natural thing that you want to know the answer of who did it, you go to the experts. That's what I did. I went to an expert, an academic expert in this field, and said, how would you identify the origins? He told me what the test was. I went ahead, asked an expert. But too easy. But when I talked to Greg Olbright, from the response that the police were saying, they're basically telling me that they haven't done that basic forensic test 4 months, which basically means that they already know who occurred, and this is just political scapegoating.
Yeah, well, they just want some kind of plausible deniability, or they're just actively trying to cover it up.
Well, it's both. I mean, they can't, if they turn around, if you look at it from their viewpoint, if they turn around and say, oh, we've actually discovered that it's actually the Chinese, and we talked about the fact that John is in the TPPA, carries American passport camp, well, that's kind of means that John's just turned around and shot New Zealand in the foot for that trade, and the farmer's going to turn around and turn him into a feral dog overnight. So he can't say it's the Chinese. On the other hand, you know, make it the best you can turn around during election time, try and get your troops in flames, go, oh, look at those terrible 1080s, use it for a little, you know, political mantra. But at the same time, it's a really good way to get in there and start finding ways to basically, because if you look around, it's not just, you know, we're now starting to see in the thousands people going out into the street and protesting against 1080. We're starting to see in the thousands people going out and protesting about the port developments. We're starting to see people going out in the tens of thousands protesting against the TPPA. This is the signal that what's happening to the government is that the people are starting to get pissed off, and they are starting to wake up. And this is where you suddenly start to need to make people intimidate them, say, well, if you start protesting or being involved in activism, this is what you can expect. And so that's another reason why they turn around and put it in that camp.
Ben, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we're coming to break now. Ben Vigen, ladies and gentlemen, postmanproductions.org is the website. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we will be right back after the break at AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
You wouldn't say that to John Key.
You never know. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's now hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the lighter side of genocide, because just because we're being exterminated by ruthless criminals doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? My very special guest is the one, the only, the fabulous, and so magnanimous, Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's lovely to be here.
Now, give us a wee bit of a breakdown. I mean, we've been talking a lot on the show over these last couple of episodes about the Northland by-election, and I just wanted to quickly get your opinion on that, and then we'll migrate to some other topics which are more your area of expertise.
Okay. Well, do you think, Vinny, or I am wondering about how MMP serves us? Because the Northland by-election meant that people had to vote for somebody that they perhaps didn't really believe in order to get rid of somebody that they really didn't believe in, instead of voting for what they wanted. Aren't we supposed to vote for what we want?
I actually was thinking about that exact thought the other day, is that when you vote strategically, it means you're not voting for who you want to vote for.
Yes, so this is my concern about MMP, which originally I really supported the idea because I thought this is great, we can get smaller parties into Parliament. But here we've got the downside. We've got the manipulative side. I mean, if I'd have been in Northland, I would have voted for Winston Peters, but he's not the person I would vote for in an election. You see what I mean? Mm. So we have a lot of people voting not for what they want, but for what they don't want.
Yeah, sort of like the least of a bad bunch. Okay, well, here's a party that's going to sign the TPPA and is passing like two laws a day and signed us up to NATO and goodness knows whatever the hell else, bro. And then here's this guy who hasn't really done any of that and has produced super gold cards and served the community for a long number of decades and what have you. It's kind of seemed a clear and obvious choice, even if it wasn't precisely what you wanted. So I get your point. And I think it's an important one. And that means that our entire election process, the MMP, the first past the post, the by-election, is tilted somewhat away from giving the people what they want.
Well, I'm not really convinced that the entire process of government is giving people what they want. I mean, don't we normally vote for what we don't want? If you look at how people have been, you know, they had Helen Clark for 3 years and then they said, well, we've had enough of her, so we'll vote for what we, you know, to get rid of her and get rid of Labour. And now they're probably going to do the same with John Key. It's not really about the policies. It's a game. We're sort of caught up in a game instead of having a vision for what we want for the future. And actually going and voting for that vision. Because the system in Parliament is adversarial. You vote these people into Parliament, and what they do down there is they're nasty to one another, they're point scoring, they're not working together for a better future for New Zealand. Mm. So the system doesn't work.
Cooperation works better than competition.
Exactly.
So
we've got, you know, I've been looking very closely at the system, why it doesn't work, what we need in its place.
Well, by all means, proceed.
Well, if you look at what's happening right over the world and the media are part of this game, everybody's looking to one leader. And one leader doesn't really do the job. They can't do the job. How can they represent that many people, especially in some of the bigger countries? So what we want, so what's happened because of that is many, many people have become totally disenfranchised with the political system. And so that's why we had 1 million people in New Zealand didn't even bother to vote. And don't tell me that they're not educated, all of those 1 million people. And don't tell me all of those 1 million people don't care. So we've disenfranchised our people by putting the power in the hands of too small a group and creating one leader. Everybody seems to think that if John Key goes, everything will be all right in New Zealand. And that's the biggest load of twaddle I have ever heard in my life. Because we've got to get rid of the neoliberals, not the, you know, not one person. So what we've got to do is to empower people. So we need politics from the ground up. Like if you look at a tree, because I believe that everything operates within the system of nature. We are operating, even though we don't understand it. In the laws of nature. So if you look at a tree, the strength is in the roots. The roots is the community. you know, and those roots in the ground, they go out to the mycorrhizal fungi and all of this, that and the other, and they're connecting. In fact, there's evidence that one tree will connect with another in a way, biologically and all of that. So if you look at that, and we have all our people at the bottom, disenfranchised, not really caring, giving up, hating the whole political system, how can we actually create something great for the country? We can't. So we need something that's where government is actually has its strength in the community. So that starts with local government. But what's happening at the moment is all the power is being taken away from local government. So we've got a super city in Auckland with what we had seven small cities that have all joined together to be a super city. We're trying to avoid that happening in Wellington. And the power of the local council, which represent the local people, is undermined. So we've got the RMA is being destroyed by government, so that the local councils can't draw on the legal RMA to protect the environment, for example. Or we've got genetic engineering. We've got areas and nuclear free areas that we've said are nuclear free or genetically engineering free and those sorts of things, and government wants to take that power away from the local councils and invest it in themselves. So if that happens, we haven't got a hope in hell of having any democratic voice.
I think that also there's been part of a deliberate agenda, as Nikki Hager exposed in his book Dirty Politics, by certain political parties to make the political race abusive and nasty. And what they found was, and this was trialed in the United States Republican Party, what they found was is that their Republican supporters would be the last ones to switch off the political process. It's your opponents. Supporters that get disillusioned with the whole process first if you play it dirty.
Well, that's absolutely it. And I mean, it's very dirty. And the media are implicit in it, of course. That's why we need people like you that are putting an alternative spin on things, Vinny, because the media is totally complicit. And I actually interviewed Lila Harray on radio. It'll actually be broadcast on Thursday. And she actually mentioned that she felt that the media gave her a pretty hard time and the Internet Mana Party. So what can we do if we don't get unbiased reporting?
Well, we can lapse into a state of complacency, ignorance, and absorption with things that have no purpose or meaning.
This is what the corporations would like, because in order to have us under control and spending money, they have created us as consumers rather than as citizens. I grew up with the idea that I would become a responsible citizen, not a consumer. But now it's buy, 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 and you need, need, need. And in fact, you don't need a lot of these things to be happy. But this is what how the economic system works, isn't it? So that's another thing that doesn't work. Not only does the system of government doesn't work, our financial system doesn't work. I'm sure you've talked a bit about that on your program.
Indeed. And the other element that you brought up, which I'm totally in line with, is the media setting the political agenda. Because we've seen in the 2011 election, the 2008 election, rather, the enormous media defamation campaign against Winston Peters and the enormous media campaign in favour of John Key. And then you saw a similar election result to the media coverage and what it was pushing. And then if we fast forward to this Northland by-election, just the recent one, we see a massive shift from the media to support Winston and ditch Key, which makes me believe that the media has now jumped ship and are now starting the narrative that, oh, Labour and all of these other people are going to solve all these problems, because I think that, well, this is my personal theory, maybe somebody on high has gotten the impression that people are starting to be cottoned on to what's really going on in this country and how little freedoms they actually truly have. And so in order to lessen that blow and lessen the resistance, we're going to give you a new flavour of tyranny to satiate you.
Well, I don't know whether I'd quite go to tyranny, suggesting that we're going quite there yet. But on the other hand, I do really feel that we've lost our voice, we've lost our democracy. If the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is signed, we've lost our sovereignty, and we'll have everybody working in order to pay off huge debts if the government sued, or else the government won't listen to the people, and so it won't get sued. And our environment here will be hugely degraded. So I absolutely despair at what will happen in this country if the TPPA is signed. But anyway, Vinny, you know, I really feel that we should challenge the whole structure of the system because it isn't working.
This is abundantly clear. And what most people go through in their life is suddenly they work out that there's a problem. And then instead of trying to implement a solution or even trying to come up with one, they spend their lives instead in deeper investigation of the problem. And this is why I think those people are incredibly valuable, especially if they work in tandem with people who know how to solve problems.
Well, that's interesting, because interviewing Lila yesterday, she was saying that you will never, and this was, I'll explain. She went on a tour from Wellington to Kaitaia, and the tour, it was called a pilgrimage in a way, was called Rethink the System. And she's not rethinking it in quite as drastic way as I am, but she talked to people all the way through the North Island as she did this. And one of the things she said was, you can never get people to agree on the problems and issues. They'll always disagree on what's caused them and all the areas around the past. But she said, if you look into the future and you talk to people about what they want for the future, many, many people are aligned with that same vision. So the way forward, in my opinion, and hers obviously as well, is that we need to actually create that vision. What do we want for New Zealand? And put our energy and focus there. And I love that saying by Buckminster Fuller, which is, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And that's what we need to do. And it's a massive task. But if enough people become involved and interested in the idea of, yeah, the system doesn't work, the economic system, the system of government, and even the justice system, they're not working, we've got to overhaul them. And if it takes a long time, it takes a long time. But I have grandchildren. And so I don't think of things in the terms of just my life. I'm thinking in terms of my children's lives and my grandchildren's lives and so on. So we've got to create something better. It's not working.
It seems that what you're proposing is a system where there's a lot more thought of others and a bit more selflessness, whereas the current system is about being self-absorbed and utterly selfish for your own needs. And that's what's wrong with it, ultimately.
Well, that's because we put money before love.
Did we put it before there, or was it put in front of us and we've been conditioned to think of it that way?
Well, we've sold it. We've swallowed it, I mean.
Yeah, either, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's been swallowed. And so when that happens, if you ask people what their values are, they'll be about compassion and love and family and all those lovely things. But when it all boils down to it, their decision-making and their voting seems to be about money. So we've got to expose that, talk about it. How can we change it? Because that it's not what we really want. I mean, I believe, personally, Vinny, that most people actually have quite a lot of integrity and really want the same things. But we're going about it in a different way. And if we can unite that vision of what we really want, then maybe if we can get rid of the stupid adversarial system in government, we could go about it working together.
Isn't this the great... Oh, sorry, isn't this the great irony, though, is that people don't step up and unite because they're afraid of stepping out of line and being ostracized? But if they did, and everybody did it as once, you could jump the chasm and completely avoid the consequences of social structure, which says, oh, you're doing something different, you're doing something original, that's not good, you should do the same thing as everybody else, son. Go get that job, go get that education, go get that debt, go get that mortgage, go get that incredibly fast car that you don't need. Go get that incredibly hot missus that you never will love. All right, see, that's the issue here, as far as I'm concerned.
And a lot of this has come through, particularly television advertising, because people are generally quite visual, and also the idea that the idea is you deserve this, you need it, all of that. It's fed in all those advertising adverts, and people are watching them all the time.
Where did the you've earned it go, you know? I'm sorry, Lisa, we're coming to a break. We'll be right back in just a few seconds, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking with Lisa Eyre of the Awareness Party here in New Zealand. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Bear in mind, it's listener-supported, so please support it today at theVinnieEastwoodShow.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Did I just pronounce it America? That's actually probably the correct pronunciation now. It's America, damn it. My very special guest is Lisa Eyre from New Zealand, from the Awareness Party. Now, we were talking about restructuring of society and how advertising is corrupting people to a large degree and taking away their real values for them by providing them with another one. It's basically a value that has no value, lack of morality, lack of compassion for others. And in so doing, it's creating a population that accepts our current paradigm politically. You know, and we'll continue to support it until such time as that paradigm is busted with some kind of sledgehammer in a psychological, loving, caring way.
Oh, well, I'd love to be holding that sledgehammer. But I'm going to repeat again my Buckminster Fuller quote, which is, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And I'm absolutely sure that we can do this.
I took that quote absolutely Buckminster full on, because I created my own radio show the way it New Zealand talk radio should basically be. It's got to be fun, it's got to be exciting, and you've got to have interesting people to talk to, and it's got to be uncensored, unfettered, non-soundbited. It's got to be fresh, you know, like organic vegetables.
It has. So let me throw a new, fresh idea to you. What if we got rid of all political parties and we had independent people working? Because if you have a political party, and I've stood as a candidate, your first loyalty really seems to be to the party. And then after that, it's listening to the electorate. And so, therefore, anybody actually who is in a political party, unless you believe with all of their policies, then you are not in integrity, because you are standing up for something you don't believe in. So I found, for example, in the Green Party that I was standing up for fluoride in the water and 1080 being dropped, and I don't believe in that. So I couldn't be in integrity, so I left. So if you look at that, all our politicians are probably not totally in integrity. So if we have a different system, a system that's grassroots, that comes from the bottom up, And I have actually created one, and the website will be up reasonably soon, because the Awareness Party website that's there now is irrelevant. Having a new system like that will change this, will change how politicians work together, how politicians are individuals, so you know what you're voting for, you know what that person believes in and stands for, so you vote for what you believe in and what you stand for.
It
will work better.
I think so, and this echoes two things. Number one, Bruce Rogan from the Mangawhai Ratepayers Association stood on the election campaign platform not to be elected at all. He said, don't elect me, I'm merely here to talk about the real issues and the things that are actually threatening our local government democracy, and the reason why we need change and we need attention paid on these issues. And he proved to be a massive influence in a huge swell of voting towards Winston. Ironic as that sounds. And that echoed a comment that I put up on Facebook not 2 weeks earlier, where I said that we needed a political party that was not a political party, one that was called the Independents, one where it doesn't have a party policy, one where it doesn't have a central control and command structure, the one where nobody takes responsibility for what other people say, and every single candidate is their own person with their own issues, and they stand up in their own sector, in their own electorate, simply to give light to those issues. Essentially converting the election campaign platform into a tool for activism and growing awareness.
Well, you've kind of got what we're about, because that is what the Awareness Party is about. If we ever got into power, that is what we would create. That is the system that we would create with three levels of government, at the roots of the tree, the trunk of the tree, and the branches. And we would create that with independence going through. And so, yes, we have to be, in order to participate in the system, we have to be a political party, and we will be getting people to sign up in the next few months. But that is the ultimate goal, is to totally shift the system to something entirely different. And we have got a plan. We have a constitution, actually, that we have written, which would be the guiding document for that. So that's what I've been doing, rather quietly, for the last year, really.
Well, you never know what people are going to, like, go into their shed and create, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a small group of us got together, and that's what we've just created, this the new system and the constitution.
Could you actually put through it in a little bit more detail? You said there were three tiers, three structures to the parliament, because currently we only have one, and that's a prime minister who gets appoint all his cabinet ministers, and has the prime minister's office, which is not governed by any laws of parliament. Basically, they can do whatever they want to protect the prime minister, and they can't break a law in the process, unless they kill somebody or whatever. But yeah, so how would the process differ? You said something like, oh, you need to look for something in order to answer that one. You got it written down?
Yes, I'm just looking here. I did think to open my other computer with it.
Mm-hmm.
The community council, that's going to be sovereign, so that a government above it can't come in and say you can't do that. So I've also got a system that draws people in. It's called sortition, and that's the system that people use for getting people to court, to jury service. It's the same system. You get a letter in the post and say, you know, you are required to come. And we would like your opinions on such and such and such and such a topic. And so people will have to go into the community council and talk with them about what they think and feel. And that would get participation back up and running, because nobody wants to go there and look like an idiot. Then the trunk of the tree, that's a regional council, because you do need things discussed in regions. And there'll be a lot of interaction, of course, between the community and the regional one. And then from there, it comes up to the National Council. And the National Council will do a lot of things that are relating to international things. And where, for example, signing trade deals or whatever, not like the TPPA, of course.
Well, basically, if it's diplomacy and it involves other countries, that's the job for the national government, who can only actually negotiate on the nation's behalf, and they basically have to leave everybody inside the country completely alone.
To run it their own way. And that goes hand in hand with an economic system that really encourages community initiatives. You've probably heard of the Hans system down in Tarkica, where they have an entirely different currency, which is used alongside the ordinary New Zealand currency. So you can have local currencies and local initiatives and cooperative banking and cooperative business, all of those things running, where the money goes back to the people that are involved, instead of these big corporations where all the money's taken outside the country.
And it also would involve minimal bureaucracy, so the libertarians would be happy about that too.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the whole idea. And then there is an advisory council that can keep an eye on things as well.
Kind of like the Jedi Council, the Guardians of Peace and Justice in the New Zealand galaxy.
Something like that, yes. So we've got those actually four councils, but three of them are in actually directly governing and cooperating with one another for the best for the people. So that's what we've put together, and it is. It's like a structure of a tree, and then if it's all working, it blossoms, and then the fruits fall down, and they nourish the roots again, which is the community.
Well, that sounds about right. Who would have thought somebody would come up with a political system that doesn't screw people over left, right, and centre? Now, the next question is, which massive corporation and private interests are going to fund such a system?
Well, that is the slight problem. And also, working with other political parties, how are they going to feel about a political party that doesn't really believe in political parties? So
they're going to hate you. People always hate what's different and they fear what they don't understand. So you can have a lot of opposition. But the thing is, they're going to be opposing a system that makes their system obsolete. So they're screwed, mate.
But that's why we're called the Awareness Party, because it's building that awareness. That's, you know, if you're attached to a result, it can sometimes be very difficult to move forward and to arrive at a certain place. But if you're attached to the process of getting there, and part of that process is building the awareness, then you can be more successful. We also have a tagline, a politics with principle, because we've obviously, Nikki Haga's exposed how lacking in principle the current system is. So we have seven principles on which to base this, which we would use to operate the whole system. We'd like to see it used throughout the country, but that's nothing compulsory there. But within the party, we have our own principles that will guide us, because it is the process. It's not just the result that is important.
Reminds me of a joke. You know why the government had to close all the public schools?
Don't know.
They didn't have any principles.
Ah, ha, ha, ha. Well, that is a spelling issue, because principles were those principles are P-A-L-S.
Ah, okay.
P-L-E-S.
Well, the Cyclops also had to close his school because he only had one pupil.
He must have been rather one-eyed.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I'm thinking about in terms of structure here, how do you get from one to the other? Now, I was talking with Ben Vigen earlier, asking him how exactly we can fan the flames, because you understand the role of divide and conquer. I was wondering if it would be possible to instigate fights within major parties to make them appear really, really unsavory to the general public. And in so doing, create gaps by which new people who are of principle, who do have parties like that are worthwhile, like your own, to get in and slip in through the cracks.
Well, that wouldn't be my first choice as to a way of working, Vinny, because, you know, creating dissension would be rather against what we want to do. We want to create cooperation. So while I can see that it probably would work, it seems to me a little bit like old technology, and that we can create something better with a new system.
It's certainly possible. There's an old saying, though, old tricks are the best tricks, eh? I get it. Now,
that could take us back a few hundred years, Vinny. We've got to. This is the age of Aquarius. This is the age of doing something new and creative and exciting. And I personally, Vinny, feel that all people, and I was brought up actually with this philosophy, all people have good within them. Doesn't matter who. So therefore, there is always something that you can appeal to them. Yes, even John Key.
If you say so.
The essence of a person always has something that is there, that is good.
My concern is that doing what's right and doing what's popular are very rarely the same thing. And in my experience and knowing many activists and researchers, it's almost the general rule. If you're trying to change something for the better, you will endure some very nasty and harsh times indeed at the hands of those who currently hold the purse strings.
Quite possible. I think that if you really believe in what you're doing, then you have to be prepared to put up with that. And I watched a wonderful movie some years ago called Amazing Grace about, I've forgotten his name now, was it Wilberforce or something, who worked to abolish slavery. And he had to put up with a huge amount. But in the end, he did it. And he died very shortly afterwards. But he hung in there, he stuck to his beliefs, and he kept saying what was right. And I thought, well, you know, we just need a few more people like that.
People who oppose lynching that want to hang in there. God, that was a bad joke, Vinny. The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing that's worse than Vinny's jokes is the truth. No, I'm just kidding. There's really nothing worse than my jokes. They're just shocking.
Relating to the world in a humorous way is quite valuable, because if you take everything so seriously, I think you'd be digging your own grave.
Oh my God, Lisa, you just reminded me of something. I saw a video on Facebook of a dude bullying another person. The guy behind him came up and pulled his pants down and everybody laughed at him. And he's like, he got totally disarmed. He pulled his pants up, walked away. That's what we could do to the political parties. Don't make them fight with each other. Make them a laughing stock. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I must, of course, bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and it does not survive without you and your contributions. For quite a few years, people have been donating regularly onto the PayPal and the Kiwi Bank accounts that are on there, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And it is merely, I think, a lot of comments that have been coming through lately is that you can learn a lot by listening to this show. It's not the same thing over and over again. It's not 30 seconds and then there's a news and then there's another news story and you forget about the last one. You'll actually get to know people. You'll get to know subjects and topics that you might have been completely unfamiliar with and may even have cast aside and ridiculed as crazy. This is the kind of thing that needs to happen, completely open and completely fun, with no obligation and no money down. My very special guest is Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party here in New Zealand, which should be starting up in a few months' time. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you, Vinny. And I may say to overseas listeners, I think that there's an opportunity for the Awareness Party to go global. Just like you've got a global green movement, we could have a global awareness movement or political parties. So I will be putting something to that effect on our website. We're just in the middle of building it at the moment, so it'll be up soon.
Isn't the colour for the party going to be purple?
It is purple, neither blue nor red.
Well, I think that's going to be very popular with cats.
Why is that?
Because cats love the colour purple. That's why Whiskers, the cat food, is coloured purple, because the cats go crazy over that kind of stuff. So if you are a cool cat, you might wind up voting for the Awareness Party.
Oh, I was thinking you were saying keep your computer out of the way of the cat.
No, I wasn't. Okay. Well, I want to round this off now. I want to talk about structure. Now, in terms of the current structure, we are dealing with a lot of blockages, okay? It's kind of like a massive network of spaghetti plumbing systems, and there's blockages each way, six ways from Sunday. Every time we turn the tap, we don't know what's going to come out of it, except that we know that it's probably going to be laced with fluoride and toxicity. And that is the ultimate purification that needs to happen here to somehow unblock or shall we say, spray some lubricant onto these rusty gears that are currently grinding this country to a halt, grinding people down, really, not giving them hope. The antithesis to hope is fear, and we have far too much of that.
Well, yes, I've always heard that the antithesis of fear is actually love. And that's really, if you talk about it as, you know, a generic form, not passionate love for a particular person, but a loving or compassionate way of being, surely that's how we should be, really. And surely people in power should get that. And so if you've got people who are not managing to pay the bills because the benefit or the minimum wage is so appalling here, then you need to be able to, the people in government should be compassionate to that and should change their policies to fix that. At the moment, the corporations put pressure and say, we don't want the minimum wage to go, you know, up. So therefore, we have to keep the benefits low because they have to be below the minimum wage.
The politicians aren't above this fear game. If anything, they probably feel a lot more of it than the general public, because the fear that they must have of being unelected any time or having some scandal envelop them at any time must be truly palpable.
Well, the thing is, not every scandal is true anyway, or it's set up by somebody who's managed to find a little chink in somebody's armour.
Granted.
To get rid of them. So we've got to also be very aware of that some of these scandals, I mean, I don't approve of what happened to Len Brown, our mayor, but on the other hand, I think it's appalling that it was a setup, that somebody actually set him up for that.
I just think he went far too far in the Ngāti Whātua room.
Uh-huh. So anyway, those are the sorts of things we've got to look out at, and not just point the finger at the person who has been set up, but also point the finger at the people who are doing the setting up.
The kind of like, instead of attacking the puppet, attack the hand that controls the puppet sort of thing?
Well, we've got to change the system.
Mm.
These people are puppets within the system. So what we've got to do is address the whole system. And seeing we've had a Westminster system of government and we've had this market-driven economy for quite some time, people are now starting to say there's something wrong with it.
Well, there were a million people who didn't turn up to vote in the 2011 election. That was the lowest voter turnout since 1886. I've been debating with myself for a long time, much more recently, Lisa. Are people ready? Have they got their eyes open? Are they ready to listen?
Well, they may not be ready to listen about politics, but often they can be ready to listen about more emotional things. Particularly the women voters will listen more to areas that affect them. That they see we've got 1 in 4 children being brought up in poverty. That affects many people. I mean, it's appalling. In a country like this that can grow all its own food, why do we have that happening? You know, and so we need to just get people to ask the questions. You see, what's happened is they've got us a bit screwed, really, because people get married, get a mortgage, have kids, go to work, and everybody's so busy that only the young people, really, and then the people whose children have grown up have kind of got time to participate in this. And yet it's really vital that people with growing children are there with us as well.
I had a conversation exactly like this with a friend of mine the other night. We were having a few beers, and I was talking to him about John Key and his past and some of the terrible things that he's done. And he's like, I don't care, I don't really bother, good on him, that sort of thing. But we changed the conversation around, is about why doesn't he care? And he said, what everybody feels, I'm so tired at the end of the day from working just to survive that I don't have the time or the energy to sit back and think about anything else other than getting wasted to distract myself from reality.
Or as my two sons do, go to the gym and get fit after work.
Yeah, it's either or. You can either get wasted or you can get buff.
Yeah, and I mean, it is. It's really difficult. People don't have the time. And we're bombarded with so many issues. It's not like there's one issue at a time.
How do we revitalize them? No. The word is inspire. Because somebody, if you're trying to motivate somebody, it means you're there. You've got to motivate them all the time. And they don't have any burning desire in their own stomach, keeping the coals going and keeping that choo-choo train a-chugging. Inspiration, on the other hand, you just plant a seed somewhere and that becomes an unstoppable oak.
Well, I think actually the things that will really trigger people that apart from poverty, are looking at people and having compassion for poverty, the things that hit themselves. So it's food and it's health and education. We should have free tertiary education. There's a lot of issues around the health department and health system and our food, increasing issues around food. People all over the place are becoming intolerant of certain foods or allergic. And why? Because we have all these herbicides and pesticides and sprayed on the food and irradiated stuff coming in from Australia. All of these things. When people actually look at that and say, well, why is this happening? And you say, because corporations are trying to control our food system and corporations are trying to control our health system, then people will start to get it. So to my mind, the way to approach people and wake them up is through food and health.
Food and medicine. Because obviously the fluoride one, that's a pretty tough one. Oh, it's safe and effective. It's safe and effective, really. How many times can you repeat that before it becomes true, son? None? Doesn't infinite? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because it's not true.
Well, I know, but now they're really, Harvard University is doing a study or doing studies on the fact that fluoride may be reducing our IQ. And of course, that could be another reason for everybody opting out of politics, because you might have to be clever to have some other ideas. And if you drink fluoridated water, you might struggle with being clever.
Yeah, no wonder why politics makes me so thirsty. Thank you very much, Lisa.
I should continue drinking spring water.
Yeah.
Well, just as I was.
There you go. She's got it sus, ladies and gentlemen. Lisa Eyre from the Awareness Party. That's Eyre with an E-R, as in on the side of caution. We'll be right back tomorrow.
That would have 2 hours.
If you say so. We'll be back another time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and I hope you visit the website very soon. Check out all the amazing archives we've done over the years and support the broadcast by donating. Go to the Gourmet Soap Kitchen with Wagga Wagga little banner there, and the blue shields as well to protect you from some of that nasty Bluetooth radiation. It's almost as bad as Blacktooth, but it doesn't have its own pirate ship. We'll see you again sometime.